You've had a dynamic where money's become freer than free.
If you talk about a Fed just gone nuts, all the central banks going nuts.
So it's all acting like safe haven.
I believe that in a world where central bankers are tripping over themselves to devalue their currency, Bitcoin wins. In the world of fiat currencies, Bitcoin is the victor.
I mean, that's part of the bull case for Bitcoin.
If you're not paying attention, you probably should be.
Yeah, mempool's cleared this weekend.
It's the first time in how long? Over a year, right?
2 years.
2 years.
2 years.
Damn. I feel like I want a little, I mean, I know the charts exist, right? Where it's like times and mempool's been clear, you know?
Merch probably has it.
Merch has got to have it. Yeah. I should get him to present it at Bitcoin Plus Plus this year if he's got it, you know?
Yeah.
Here in Austin.
Well, that's what we were just talking about before we hit record. The Austin BTC Plus Plus. That was really focused on scripts
last year. Yeah.
And there was a lot of fervor coming out of that. The great script restoration, a lot of talk about OpCat versus OpCTV.
OpCat, OpCTV got talked about. I think one of the like niche projects, which you don't hear a lot about, is this thing called MAT, which is Merkleize all the things. Yeah, I think GSR, Great Script Restoration, was probably the biggest new thing that people talked about. Yeah, it's been kind of interesting to see where that conversation has gone in the last year. I haven't really kept up with it. And this year we're going to focus not on script. We're going to focus on mempools and mining pool stuff because there's a lot of really cool new things that have been worked on and shipped in Bitcoin Core in the last year. I think as of version 28, they've now got this new ephemeral anchor stuff is coming out. And that's in, I don't know. I know there were a couple stages of releases that they're adding it in. I don't know where they are in the stages currently, but so they're going to come. I've been talking to the OpTech guys about doing some workshops about all the new mempool stuff. They're working on a brand new way of working how the mempool actually works, period, called cluster mempool. Yeah, so this is a new project that Peter Willett and Suhas Dofter of Chaincode came up with, I want to say 2 years ago. So it's kind of a, like, so one thing that's not really well that known, and like, I didn't really know it until I did a one-day mempool workshop during Prague like 2 years ago. And so I was doing a bunch of research into how mempools work because I was, you know, curious and I needed to be able to explain it to people. And when you send a transaction into the mempool, it doesn't, the way that just a default Bitcoin Core node would decide whether that transaction should be included in a block or not, isn't what you would expect it to be, if that makes sense. And probably the biggest example of this is like if you have a big transaction in a coin join, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you've got like, let's say 500 people who all want that coin join transaction to go into the next block, right? You would expect that maybe like each of the 500 people could send another little transaction that would like kind of stand behind it and push it, right?
Like an RBF or?
Like a child pays for parent, okay. Is what we call it, like CPFP. So basically if this big transaction, then you send another smaller one with a higher fee rate, right? And so if you get the big one in, you also get the smaller one in. And so if you get 500 people to do that, you'd think, well, surely, you know, you could take that one big one and all those small ones. And that would make a lot of sense, right? But the current algorithm doesn't look at it that way. It looks at each one of those 500 independently. It doesn't group them together.
So it doesn't know that the individuals who want that coin join transaction to get confirmed with that child pays for parent, the cumulative child pays for parent, the mempool or nodes don't recognize that they're associated.
Exactly.
Okay.
So the cluster mempool is like, instead of what if going like one at a time by like, parent, what if we look at them as a cluster, like a whole group?
Well, would the group just need like a flag in each of their CPFP transactions that signals that they're together? Or?
So in theory, just the fact you should be able to figure out they're all together just by based on what outputs you're spending.
Mm-hmm.
But this algorithm doesn't exist in Bitcoin Core yet.
And this would be, is that wouldn't be a consensus change. It would just be a P2P.
No, it's just a ship it chained. Yeah. Like, you know, it's kind of, this is why mempool stuff I feel like is more fun to talk about. I mean, the stuff we did get last year about script was also very fun to talk about, but definitely a lot more, you know, contentious and consensus focused, because he's like, you have to change what people agree about is like a valid Bitcoin opcode to move forward, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Whereas like this stuff, the mempool stuff this year, it's, you know, you just have to add it to Bitcoin Core. And if no one, it's not consensus. It's just like whoever's running whatever mempool policy they want to some extent.
Well, and it's funny, they are loosely associated, because last year the focus was scripts. And I think a lot of the impetus behind the momentum of that particular conversation was because there was congestion in the mempools. Okay. And people were very aggressive about positioning different covenant proposals to get them merged into Bitcoin Core as a way to ease congestion on the mempool. Now, fast forward 1 year, mempool's just cleared on Saturday. And yeah, now those same people, not every one of those people, but some of those people are saying Bitcoin has failed. Nobody's using Bitcoin.
Oh, well, they should sell all their Bitcoin then. You know, look, if you think Bitcoin has failed, it's real simple. Just sell all your Bitcoin and go buy whatever else it is you buy with money these days. I don't know. I hear real estate's taken off. I don't know. You know.
Well, I guess that gets to the question of priorities, and I'm interested to get your perspective on this. Like, where do, in your mind, what are the highest priority things to focus on? Like, whether it's covenants to create efficiencies that lead to less congestion in the mempool and open up a new sort of design landscape for what you can do with UTXOs, or is it more boring, what many would deem to be more boring sort of P2P algorithm fixes to make it more efficient without consensus change?
I think everyone has different perspectives here, right? Yeah. Like, I definitely come from the Lightning world. So like when I want things in Bitcoin, it tends to be more related to like what's going to help Lightning improve. And that's like just my bias, right? Because that's where I spent the most time working on protocol stuff. So a lot of the what will help Lightning is a lot of this mempool updates, right? There's also some consensus changes that make it easier to move to a different protocol for Lightning called L2, which is should maybe pave a way to where you could have Lightning with multi-parties, et cetera. And that's going to take some sort of consensus changes, et cetera. But I think the mempool stuff is really exciting because it has a more direct impact on how people use Bitcoin, if that makes sense. So like when fees get higher, how capable are you of being able to spend more money to get your transaction mined and actually like actively participate in block space auctions, right, with your transactions? I think there's some low-hanging fruit there in terms of updating, you know, what kind of algorithms make it possible for you to rebid your transaction, that kind of thing. So there's been a bunch of changes to try and make that a little bit more possible. Peter Todd, who's going to come talk in Austin, I really like some of his proposals. I know he tends to be quite controversial. that doesn't always make me the most popular person. Like, I think Peter has a really good point about some of this stuff. So I think mempool stuff is really interesting and important, especially because it has to do with usability of Bitcoin just on chain, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of the new proposals that people want to put out with covenants is about moving people off chain, you know, like, and all these new proposals, all the new covenant stuff are going to have to get transactions mined at some point, right?
Yep.
So these like rails on chain matter for your ability to like, you know, if something, usually like when you go to a second layer, you only need to go on chain if something bad happens, right? Basically, right? Like system starts failing you, or you want to exit for some reason. And that point, like, it's in Lightning, is one thing that you really see. Your ability to get your transaction into a block quickly is like really important, right? So, I mean, these mempool things like impact everyone, and they impact everyone's security to some extent, especially when you start looking at moving your funds into layer two projects, that kind of thing.
Yeah. And I mean, tying it in with the other part of the focus at the Bitcoin Plus Plus event in Austin this year with the mining pools. That's one thing that's been talked about, as well as the emergence of these out of band transactions and foregoing the mempool. Is that going to be a focus?
I hope so. Yeah. I hope we're going to have some really good conversations about it, because I like having public data sources for where the transactions are coming from.
Mm-hmm.
I think that having private relays for mempool is difficult, because it makes it, you know, if you're a Lightning node, you know, you're a sovereign Lightning node runner, and you need to get your transaction mined in the next, like, I don't know, 20 blocks, whatever, right? For reasons, otherwise you're going to start losing money because of the way the payment things work. You need to know how much to reasonably pay to get that transaction within the next 20 blocks, right? Right now you get that from public data sources, which is like blocks that have already been mined or the mempool, right? If you start getting private relays where transaction fees are paid out of band, so that the fee rate that's reflected publicly in the block no longer is a good representation of what it actually takes to get a transaction mined, all of a sudden you run into problems with like all these projects, like Lightning algorithms, et cetera, that, you know, need to know how much to pay to get your transaction mined. It's like, well, where do you get that data from now? Are you going to have to pay a private data broker who knows that data, because you can't get it publicly anymore? You know, so I think that's the sort of thing that, you know, when you're designing protocols or like building new ways to get transactions mined or relayed, you know, they have big, big impacts on the other ability for people to build up on top of the decentralized protocols.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, that's what the mining pool area, whether they're accepting payments out of band or just the way the businesses operate themselves right now, I think it's very well known, at least in people that are paying attention, the space of people that are paying attention, that the mining pool, the dominant mining pool payout scheme of FPPS these days, is natural centralizing forces within the mining pool layer of Bitcoin. And that was cool in Nashville. I had a conversation, not in Nashville, but earlier this year with Cali, about one of the cooler projects on Cashew that he highlighted, and had the chance to meet the gentleman working on that in Nashville this week, which is the idea of eHash using like a Cashew mint, Chaumium mint, to basically monetize shares of a mining pool right away, and then peg out with eCash tokens that have privacy benefits, and then also the added benefit of something that smaller Bitcoin miners have wanted for quite some time, which is the ability to redeem payouts via Lightning very quickly.
Yeah, it's hard though. Like, I feel like there's a nice, I feel like eCash makes a really amazing bridge, right? Between being able to like stack up shares in eCash and then being able to use that eCash balance to pay out with Lightning. It's hard to get, Lightning and mining, I feel like, is like a really difficult thing, because most of the flows tend to be one way, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Lightning doesn't work really great. Lightning starts having problems when you need one way only flows. But eCash is kind of a nice like shim in the middle, if that makes sense. Because you can hand out shares with eCash, and then once it hits a certain balance, then make it easier to pay out over Lightning. I don't know.
What's up, freaks? Do you have a credit card? Are you getting cash back or airline points or points for some other service? Guess what? Those are shitcoins. You want to be stacking Bitcoin. And I have some groundbreaking news for you. The team at Fold has finally released the Bitcoin Rewards credit card. They have a wait list. They're going to be distributing the cards later this year. So you want to get on the wait list. Fold Plus members are going to get unlimited 2% Bitcoin back on this credit card. If you get on the wait list, they're up to $200,000 in prizes they're going to be given out. So get on it as quickly as possible. Go to tftc.io/fold and get on the wait list there. If you're on the wait list, you have the potential to win some of the prizes. Check it out. Sup, freaks? This rip of TFTC was brought to you by our good friends at BitKey. BitKey makes Bitcoin easy to use and hard to lose. It is a hardware wallet that natively embeds into a 2 or 3 multi-sig. You have one key on the hardware wallet, one key on your mobile device, and Block stores a key in the cloud for you. This is an incredible hardware device for your friends and family, or maybe yourself, who have Bitcoin on exchanges and have for a long time, but haven't taken a step to self-custody because they're worried about the complications of setting up a private public key pair, securing that seed phrase, setting up a PIN, setting up a passphrase. Again, BitKey makes it easy to use, hard to lose. It's the easiest 0-to-1 step, your first step to self-custody. If you have friends and family on the exchanges who haven't moved it off, tell them to pick up a BitKey. Go to bitkey.world, use the key TFTC20 at checkout for 20% off your order. That's bitkey.world, code TFTC20. What have you been paying attention to the intersection of Arc and Lightning? Could that help that one way?
Maybe. Arc's definitely interesting. I haven't really been paying too much attention to it. Like, I see them sort of like float up on Twitter every once in a while and talk about what they're up to. I feel like I haven't really paid attention in a little bit, but all those things are like, you need things that are like more liquidity centralized, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And like eCash tends to be that. Arc definitely can be that. You could swap eCash and Arc out. I feel like almost interchangeably, not exactly. Arc gets complicated because you start getting carrying costs for your capital. Again, I don't know if they talk about this much with Arc, but eCash, the idea is it's a custodial thing, right?
Yeah.
So the miners would still hold the Bitcoin, in theory. They give you eCash shares for it, right? And then at some point you could just cash out the eCash shares over Lightning or whatever. But with Arc, basically all that capital has to exist in like on chain in a way.
Mm-hmm.
And my understanding is that if you're holding an Arc, like it's kind of like a certificate of deposit.
VTXO.
At a bank.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you know, like at a bank, you get a CD and it's good for like 12 months, 36 months, right? And then when it ends, you have to like roll it over and get a new one. My understanding is the VTXOs work the exact same way. They have like a period of time, like 2 weeks or 6 months or whatever. And then afterwards, you have to basically pay to jump to the next one. So I don't know.
You have to like claim your VTXO before it expires.
Exactly. And but it's got a rollover cost.
Yeah. And so I saw Alex Berg, who's working for Arc Labs now.
Yeah.
He posted a note on Noster and Twitter, I believe. And basically highlighted they have a proof of concept where they're combining Arc, Cashew, and Noster, where they're essentially creating eCash tokens, or if you don't cash out your VTXO in time before the rollover, you can claim a commensurate amount of eCash tokens.
It falls to the custodial, basically.
Yeah.
But they have this, like, I think, like, Arc is gonna, I don't know if struggle is the right word, but I think they're really gonna have a time with that expiration thing.
Because
people aren't used to having money that expires.
No.
Like, you put it, this is a nice thing about, I mean, one interesting thing about Lightning, Lightning channels are like channels for payments. I guess they call them payment channels. Had several designs that they went through. And like the original one that I think Christian Decker came up with, his original proposal was like you could basically use it X number of times. And then after like the 100th time, you'd have to close it and open a new one. And so it made the current design of Lightning channels actually really useful and like revolutionarily good. Like the reason that everyone kind of condensed around this one single design that we use for Lightning channels today is that they're like infinite, if that makes sense. Like you can make almost an infinite number of payments and then there's no timeout. Like you can like they're good, they're like open, you can like do a bunch of payments and then at some point in the future you can close it. There is a little counter in there that if like you reach the max counter, but it's like a huge number, right? Like it's not something you could reasonably hit in a lifetime, I don't think. But like, you know, so some of the early designs were like these like kind of things that have counters, et cetera, and you'd have to roll over after so many. The problem with that is that rolling over incurs on-chain costs usually, right? And so it's like, oh, well, like, there's like a cost built, like there's this like eternal cost built into carrying your capital that way in Arc, for example.
But nobody's using Bitcoin. It's
okay. Yeah. So it's, I mean, like if no one's using Bitcoin, you can just hold it on chain, right? You don't have to worry about these layer two things. If you're never going to use your Bitcoin, put it in your UTXO, take the keys, drop it at the bottom of the lake. Like, you know, like,
well,
it's yours. It's got your name on it.
It was a bit poetic as when the mempool cleared on Saturday. I know. I haven't talked to him about this. I've talked to him, but not about this. Matt and I had an open bet on RHR going back probably like a year or two about mempools clearing before the next halving. I said, yes, they're going to clear, and they did clear. So I won the bet.
Oh, but congrats.
Thank you.
As of like 2 days ago.
As of 2 days ago, but he paid out over Lightning on Nostr. Like, he's at me, the total amount of the bet.
And got it.
It was like a poetic, like, I'm sending this over Lightning, not on chain, even though I could.
Right.
At one set per V, like, and
probably would have been cheaper depending on how he sent the payment.
Yeah. It was a zap on Nostr, so depending on what his setup is.
Yeah, but every, you know, Lightning charges per sats moved generally, not by like, you know, an on-chain is like number of bytes it takes V-bytes, to make it. Yeah. So depending on how big the payment was and which route he sent it, you know, which route the zap goes to get to your wallet, it might have been more expensive for him to do that.
Yeah. Like, the cost of being poetic, you know?
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Artistic costs, like, are separate things, but. Yeah.
Now, it's funny, Bitcoin, it was funny watching all the hoopla over mempools clearing and people being like, Bitcoin's dead. But it's like, I use Lightning every day. Like, I think there has been a material shift, at least by power users, to second layers, which I think is ultimately good at the end of the day.
Well, I mean, this is what I love about Lightning, is it's so underground in some ways. It's like really hard to get stats on. No one actually knows how many users Lightning has, right? Like, there's no central authority you can go knock on the door and be like, how many users you got, you know? I mean, you can go ask different people how many users they got, like Wallet of Satoshi, Rivers Got Stats. River used to do this. They used to go knock on everyone's doors and be like,
I think they do like an annual report. Where they try to...
they're still doing their annual report. But I like to joke that's like the last true journalism, is like trying to figure out how many like users are on Lightning. Because the only way you can figure it out is like actually doing gumshoe reporting, like talking to everybody and being like, you know, because there is like, it literally is like, it's not like on chain where you can see how full the mempool is. I don't know.
You can literally audit the UTXOs and know how many exist and what public addresses.
And last time they moved, like, you know, how many addresses are there? Like all these things, right?
Yeah.
How many taproot versus whatever with Lightning? It's just like, who knows?
Yeah. Which brings up like, we're getting to like a lot of unanswered questions here. And I think that's a lot of what your focus is equipping people with knowledge to go out and answer those questions.
Trying to, as much as possible. Or at least cluing them in into like, hey, there's something interesting going on over here. Like, you know, maybe this is worth paying attention to. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, yeah, it's like, you know, it is kind of interesting. Like, it's like, did Bitcoin scale? Maybe the fact that the mempool is empty is proof that Bitcoin has scaled.
Yeah.
And like, I don't know. Hard to say. Like, who's to say, right? Yeah. Are more people like, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, you can look at the on-chain data alone. Like, it settled, I believe, last year, $19 trillion.
Jesus, seriously?
In transactions. That's not even half of what it did in 2021, which was $42 trillion.
So, oh, wow.
I would say that's scaling, and that's on-chain. And how much, as you mentioned, we don't know how many Lightning users there are. Like, how much activity has been pushed to that layer. You can sort of get some rough estimates. And then we've had the emergence of these eCash mints and a Nostr with NIP 60, I believe, like the implementation of mpub.cash. I don't know. I would be shocked if adoption was material, but it seems to be increasing.
I would be real careful about using Nostr to store your eCash balances, though.
You don't want
to
store Bitcoin and Nostr relays?
No, I don't, actually, now that you mention it. Like, and for those of you who aren't aware of why I would say that, it's because there's no guarantees of persistence on Nostr relays. Mm-hmm. Like, you can send them all the like little notes and say how much eCash you have. But unless you're running your own relay, which is saving all that data for you, like, I don't know, I wouldn't.
Yeah. I think they're doing a good job of saying, don't put a lot of, like, don't hold a lot of money in here. But it is.
Good. But it make it too easy. I don't think people may not hear that. You know what I mean?
Well, that gets back to the question is like, whether you're complaining about the lack of on-chain activity or calling Lightning centralized, people have these idealistic visions of how people should interact with Bitcoin. And
that's true. I mean, I just don't want people to lose their money.
No, neither do I.
Yeah. I mean, it'd be terrible for you to think that like that's a good place to have it and then find out it's not. Which is probably what's going to happen to people, you know?
Yeah.
It's just like, that's more likely case is you think it's okay. And then, I don't know, some 6-month-old note that says you have like, I don't know, 100,000 Satoshis or whatever gets like disappeared.
Yeah.
So no one remembers to keep it.
And that would be just like the eternal September, because that's how people,
exactly.
People like sent Bitcoin to wallets in the past and realized they needed to save their wallet.dat file or something like that.
Yeah,
and
exactly. Exactly.
They're scouring, trash dumps in England looking for servers.
I mean, how do you go find old Noster notes? Like, where do you even look for them, right?
That's above my
archival. We need the, what is it? We basically need like the, what's that web internet archive? The internet archive for Noster? I don't know if that's
Wayback Machine.
Yeah, exactly. Go hunt for like missing eCash notes for your InPub.
It's very raw.
That,
I guess that's the, the crux of what we're getting at here is like, what in terms of the risk curve of experimentation, like, how far should we push and figure out where faults lie and fix them?
It was like, but you already know where that fault is. I'm like, don't trip over it. I just like, don't fall down that one. Like, I can see that one like mile away. I don't know.
This will be clipped in like a year or two from now when something happens. Lisa warned you.
It's like there's a big hole there. I don't know, y'all. Just like watch out for that one. Yeah. I mean, yeah. I mean, like, look, Lightning has its edges too. It's like a lot harder to onboard people. That whole thing of onboarding. Like, who does that though? I'm kidding.
Well, that's, are people too impatient, do you think, with all these discussions? Whether like we're,
I don't know. I mean, I think people make good points. I do think sometimes that, like, so I was on a podcast earlier this year with Isabel Fox and Duke talking about Lightning stuff. And I was like, you know, I think people tend to hate on Lightning, and I'm not really sure why. Like, they call it centralized. And you sit there and you're like, okay, but Lightning is literally the most decentralized layer 2 in existence, period. Like, find me another L2 that has as many independent parties running independent servers that process payments for it. Like, there isn't one.
Base.
No. I was like, I thought it was just Coinbase. What? Yeah.
But that's a comparison. Like,
is it? This is news to me. I mean,
no, but like, this is like, that's like the most popular L2. And if we're.
Yeah, but it's like KYC centralized, like, you gotta like have a Coinbase account to get out of it, right? Yeah. Like, it's anyway, yeah. But like, and then people always like, oh, but Lightning centralized. I'm like, in what way? Like, please explain to me how where you're getting this information about Lightning being centralized. Like, it's an open protocol. You don't like where your payments are going, open a channel and send them somewhere else. Like,
well, now we got Tether on Lightning. Could that be a centralizing force?
I mean, only if like, the way that would be centralizing is if there's only like 3 places you can channels that accept the Tether payments. And so you have to go to one of those.
And even then it's like the Bitcoin flowing through channels is not beholden to that.
No.
Yeah.
Not at all.
Yeah.
Like, not in any way, shape or form. Like, I mean, we talk about centralization. It's like where the liquidity is. And it's like, well, if you don't like it, go put some more liquidity on it somewhere else. Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah. Do you envision that liquidity issue leading to more centralization? Are we in a happy sort of honeymoon stage?
I mean, I think that it's definitely going to be, I think liquidity is definitely going to be a thing that shapes the network, if that makes sense. Yeah. Like, and if there's not liquidity in the right places, hopefully there will be enough of a, like, I think the hard thing is like getting signals of where to put more liquidity on Lightning because of how private it is. But I mean, the liquidity is going to flow where the liquidity is, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so if you mean centrality in terms, centralization in terms of, well, there's only one way to get from point A to point B and it's through these 3 channels, then yeah, the money's going to flow through those 3 channels, right? But ideally in like a free market system, someone would see, well, oh, I could make money if I like put liquidity in this place, right? And there's ideally a bunch of people competing to earn as many sats as possible on Lightning. And that competition, I feel like, is the only thing that's going to prevent it from becoming like centralized. So right.
What you're saying is the free market will build the roads on the Lightning Network.
I mean, that's the hope. Like, that's literally the hope. Yeah. And my free market, it's not free market so much as like, ability to earn returns, right? Mm-hmm. Like, people, I think, like, Bitcoiners in particular, and like a subset of them, I will say, are like motivated to earn more sats with their sats, right? Like, I don't know. If Lightning is like works correctly, I think it should be competitive.
Well, I think we're at the point where I can say Lightning works correctly.
Lightning definitely works.
Where are we? 7, 8 years like in now?
It's almost a decade. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the mainnet launched in
2018.
I thought it was 2018. Might have been 2017.
No, it was 2018.
It was 2018. Okay. Yeah. That's when I started. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I started after mainnet launch, but yeah. Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, so we're almost seven years in. I think it was like February, March of 2018, if I recall correctly.
Slow growth. Yeah.
Yeah.
Problem with decentralized networks is they take a long time to take off, right?
That's getting back to my question of impatience. That's the frustrating thing for me as an observer, as a user, as somebody investing in the space, is like people, these great ideas exist and people expect them to just materialize. Like, oh, the idea exists. It should work tomorrow. It's like, that's not how things work.
I mean, how long did it take us to get the internet? It's kind of a fun thing, right? Like, ARPANET started in the 60s,
mm-hmm.
and it wasn't until like the 90s that we got the Eternal September situation going.
Yeah. And then, even then, it was like a janky form of the internet where we had to get AOL CDs and download it onto our computer.
Yeah.
And get access.
When would you say that the internet hit like a point of no return?
I think, yeah, late 90s, early 2000s. Like, I think eBay, Amazon.
So that's like 40 years after it was invented.
Yeah.
Maybe 50 even, right? For being like super generous. So Lightning's at like what? 8 years? Five. Eight,
Bitcoin at 16.
7 years. Yeah. So all things considered, we're like moving light speeds.
This rip was brought to you by our great friends at Unchained. As Bitcoin's role in the global financial landscape evolves, understanding its potential impact on your wealth becomes increasingly crucial. Whether we see measured adoption or accelerated hyper-Bitcoinization, being prepared for various scenarios can make the difference between merely participating and truly optimizing your position. This is important, freaks. This is why Unchained developed the Bitcoin Calculator, a sophisticated modeling tool that helps you visualize and prepare for multiple Bitcoin futures. Beyond traditional retirement planning, it offers deep insights into how different adoption scenarios could transform your wealth trajectory. What sets this tool apart is the integration with the Unchained IRA, the only solution that combines tax advantages of a retirement account with the security of self-custody. In any future state, maintaining direct control of your keys remains fundamental to your Bitcoin strategy. Go explore the potential futures at unchained.com/TFTC. Bitcoin is going up. Make sure you're protecting it the right way. Make sure you have a good partner. That is Unchained. Go to unchained.com/TFTC.
And that's, are you seeing any, through what you're doing at Bitcoin Plus Plus, more invigorated attention from a broader developer community? Is Bitcoin a cool place to build these days?
Feels like it's cool again. Yes. Okay. I haven't had started to see inflows of new devs yet, but I feel like that's mostly just a marketing thing on our side, like failure to market. I think there's definitely some real competition from AI stuff. That makes sense. Mm-hmm. Stuff. AI stuff. It's interesting. I think people are really interested in building using AI or on the AI side. It's been really impressive to see how fast those tools have like gotten to where you can build things using AI coding like so quickly.
I mean, there's some people in this office so I'll check in with once a week. Like, what are you doing? They're like, oh, I just talked to Whisper. It connects to Cursor, writes me up something, and then I go and lightly edit, and boom, able to push to production.
Yeah, it's insane to me. It's like a old school. At this point, I think it's fair to call myself an old school dev. Like, I had to hand code it, you know, well, like XYZ or whatever, like hand pull it from Stack Overflow, you know.
Well, is that an area that you think Bitcoin developers should be focused on? Is like, should we be leveraging these AI tools to?
I don't think it's a bad idea. I think so. Like, you know, if you want to reach the younger developers, I like figuring out how they to show them that they can use AI tools to make Bitcoin things happen probably isn't the worst idea. I'm currently working on trying to get a little hackathon going for South by Southwest week. That'll be Bitcoin plus plus. Still figuring out exactly who we're going to partner with for it, but do like a 2-hour Bitcoin hackathon. That's like, I'm calling it a turbo hackathon.
Who would your ideal sponsor be?
Replit, I think, at this point. So I'm talking to some people there. We're figuring out like if they're going to support it or not, but I reached out to a couple of their coding tool people, like something called Lovable. And there's one, I think, called bolt.new.
I used the Replit agent to build an SEC, a combination of Replit agent and Cursor to build an SEC scraping tool. And I think Replit is the perfect. Amjad, obviously, founder, CEO, is very, he gets Bitcoin. He's been on this show before, and I think he's down for the cause. And obviously, they're very forward when it comes to AI. And
yeah,
it feels natural to me, particularly if the agents take off, they're going to need to be able to do things
with Bitcoin.
They're going to need to spend money, and Bitcoin is the perfect medium in the monetary good in the digital
age. Medium of exchange to
to facilitate that.
That could be spicy in the right circles there, yeah. Marty, you know?
Yeah. No, and that's like don't spend your Bitcoin. Nobody's using it. It's so funny. You get just a confluence of idiotic, contradictory statements from many people. But back to Replit. I think Amjad, like, we're lucky we have Amjad as the founder and CEO of that company, because I think it will be. Do you use Replit? People that use Replit here in the comments, they rave about it.
All the Base 58 classes, like exercises, are on Replit. So, I've used it in the past. I haven't used it recently. I haven't been doing a lot of coding recently, but I think I have a friend who's not really a dev. She uses Replit for everything. Like, yeah, I think it's definitely an amazing tool that makes it super accessible.
Maybe this is how you get Replit as a sponsor. You focus the hackathon on making it easy for Replit bounties to get paid out in Bitcoin.
Oh, there we go. Okay. All right, Replit, if you're listening, I don't know. No, I've been talking to them. They're going to, yeah, I need to figure that one out. Exactly. But hopefully that'll be it. So if you're in Austin for South by Southwest, Bitcoin Plus Plus is doing a 2-hour hackathon. We're going to be
2 hours.
2 hour, yeah.
What can you build in 2 hours?
Exactly. That's the thing. It's like, what can't you build in 2 hours, you know? But the idea is that you use the AI, like, tools, coding tools, to do your best in 2 hours. And that's the whole thing, is like, how much can you literally get done with these AI tools?
And is it just a broad, I don't want to say mandate, but like a broad sort of...
Build with Bitcoin is like the idea, yeah.
Yeah, just do something with Bitcoin in 2 hours.
Yeah, yeah. Using any AI tool you want.
Damn.
Right?
Yeah.
Seems like that's like a real challenge, right?
Yeah, because you have to think, all right, 2 hours... I guess you'd have to limit the scope of what you ultimately want to accomplish.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I think it takes some like practice with knowing what these tools, these new AI coding tools, are good at, right? Because if you're going to be successful, you're going to want to do something that like they can actually accomplish in 2 hours.
Yeah. Wow. That's just a hard problem. Like, what would I prompt all these AI tools to build if
right?
I only had 2 hours?
But hopefully, I think the fun thing is, like, you could come and participate. Like, yeah. You don't have to be a dev. Like, you can come and work using your AI tools. And if you've got a great idea and you can, like, talk to the AI faster than anyone else can, get your idea out.
Yeah. It took me 6 hours to build that SEC scraping tool, so I need to really...
Okay,
really
so you
down.
Know, all right, so but you know what the like...
Yeah, and I've never written a line of code in my life outside of my MySpace page and a little HTML CSS.
And now you've written a whole tool.
Yeah. All right. Maybe I will join.
Yeah, come hang out. I think this is one of the things that excites me about these tools and these kinds of little events, is that hopefully it makes the bar to getting into trying to make tools with Bitcoin for yourself like that much more accessible, right? Yeah.
When is the, what day is that towards South by Southwest?
I'm hoping to make it Wednesday. We're still kind of in the early planning stages.
So that'd be the 12th or?
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. It'd be like the 12th of March. Hoping to do it at the Commons.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's gonna be it. Free ticket. I think the winning, we're definitely giving away tickets to Bitcoin Plus Plus in May. Will be like probably one of the prizes. Maybe some sats in there. We'll see if we can get like a sat sponsor.
The growth of Bitcoin Plus Plus and the amount of traveling that you do is extremely impressive.
Oh, thanks.
So we have Austin. Are you doing Berlin again? Or
yeah, so we actually, I did three events last year and I had so much fun. I decided to do six this year, which is insane. I don't, hopefully, we'll see how it goes. Trying it out. We got Brazil this month. So in 2.5 weeks, I'm going to be down in Brazil. I'm so behind on getting that. Oh my God. Just stressed about this one. Hopefully it'll be fine.
It'll be fine.
Yeah. That was just, this is our first one where it's mostly hacking and hanging out and like working on stuff. So worst comes to worst, everyone has to buy themselves lunch. I think it'll be fine.
Well, the one in Berlin last year looked really cool. I only had pictures of the space, but everybody was like sitting on that.
That worked out.
Platform, that super fun. Two-tiered platform giving talks.
Yeah. That was really good. Yeah. That was really fun. That was unplanned, but it worked out great. Yeah, so we'll be in Austin in May doing the mining and mempool stuff. That's going to be May 7th to 9th. I'm going to take some of summer off, and then we're going to have a run in the winter. We're going to have, we'll be, I don't know if it's been like current announced yet, but we're planning one for Bitcoin Plus Plus right ahead of Baltic Honey Badger in Riga. Yeah. So if you're going to the Riga event, come a few days early, and we'll be doing one focused on privacy and freedom stuff, because you can't have freedom without privacy. We'll be in Istanbul the month after in September, focusing on all the new, hopefully, I'm calling it like the scaling one, where maybe we'll bring back kind of that conversation about opcode stuff that we had here in Austin last May, as well as really focusing in on how zero knowledge proofs can scale Bitcoin. Ooh. I think that'll be really fun.
Yeah.
There's some really interesting, really wild ideas about how we can use zero knowledge proofs to scale.
What excites you most about that? Because I met Abdul from Starknet, and he was the first one where I was like, all right, ZK proof has always been this, I don't want to say hand wavy, but this pie in the sky thing.
I'm going to cough. Okay. No, I'm not. Okay. I think the zero knowledge proof stuff, I'm also really skeptical about. I'm just going to say it, but it's one of those things I don't know a bunch about. I've talked to a couple of really smart people, and when they talk about it, I think it's this idea that you just need way less data to get way more stuff provably into the blockchain, mm-hmm. is my understanding. And so it makes it such that you can do kind of almost any sort of script project. Like you could do any sort of script program around Bitcoin, and it doesn't really have to be, my understanding is you don't really have to like update Bitcoin to do that, you know, because you have these zero knowledge proofs. And so you just need the zero knowledge proofs. And then you get access to a lot of computation sort of stuff. But as a burden on the network, you can have really complex programs that no one has to actually run. And so you can use really complex arbitrary logic to safeguard your Bitcoin. But the cost of that doesn't get borne by
the node runners
anymore, which is kind of seductive. I don't know.
It's very seductive. But then it goes back to what we were talking about earlier. Like, oh. Is it going to be so efficient that there's no fees on the main chain?
Yeah, I don't know. These are good questions, right?
Do we need to lower the block size limit?
Oh, this is a fun one.
Isn't it?
Yeah, maybe. I was talking to someone who I'm trying to convince them to write a BIP to launch in Austin this year about, wasn't lowering the block size, but increasing the time between blocks. And the reason for that is so that we can get mining happening on Mars.
Well, yeah, that's the... I mean, Dhruv from Unchained's written about this, the Musk coin.
Yeah, exactly.
The center of hash. So that, I guess extending the block time, let's say we just double it from 10 to 20 minutes, would push the center of hash out further into the solar system.
Yeah, exactly.
It possible for.
Right. So instead of, you don't have to make the block smaller, you could just extend the time, mm-hmm. and you could do it based on like interplanetary communication like delays, right? And that would effectively be the same as a block size decrease, right? So you do that, you add zero knowledge proofs, and Bitcoin looks quite different than it does currently. One of the problems with zero knowledge proofs right now, though, is that they're big. So like a proof is big.
So, and those are currently handled by centralized validators, correct?
So right now, you can't do any zero knowledge proof stuff on Bitcoin itself.
Yeah, but I'm talking the applications on like Ethereum and other.
Yeah, this is why I'm having a conference about it. I don't know. I don't actually know how these things work. The small things that people have told me about them sound very compelling and interesting. So like, hopefully we can get all these people together and we'll do a bunch of talks and come out with like in Istanbul, here's the idea about how the stuff works.
Yeah.
Maybe here's what the roadmap for Bitcoin's future looks like. No, I'm kidding. But, you know.
Starknet and then, was it Apen Labs? Or what?
Alpen Labs. They've been talking about Shielded CSV, which is, is that really zero knowledge proofs? I don't, this is where I get confused about exactly what a zero knowledge proof is. I think it's quite different, but it's a different way of doing shielded transactions with client-side validation.
Yeah.
Yeah. Citrea is the one I'm talking with, like pretty partnering with them to do the event in Istanbul because they're based in Istanbul.
Okay.
They've been doing BitVM stuff to get this. I think you can use BitVM to do zero knowledge proof things.
Or does zero knowledge proof make BitVM more scalable? Yeah.
Maybe one or the other.
Because that's the thing with BitVM, it doesn't take a lot of data on chain.
It takes a lot of data on chain. Yeah. But I think it's arbitrary computation, so you could build a ZK-like prover in it, Handwave. These are all good questions.
Yeah. I default to, like, do you think we need all of this stuff?
This is where I get back to the, like, keep it simple, stupid.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like, do we need arbitrary computation on Bitcoin? Whether it's, like, powered by ZK or not. Like, how much, you know, are public-private keys not enough? You know, like, it's... I think that's like a taste question to some extent, which isn't, you know, and taste is like, I wouldn't say slightly arbitrary, but, you know, like.
Subjective.
I think it's slightly subjective. Like, you know, when you look at like what all these computation things are trying to get away from, it's like, you know, what's wrong with like Liquid? Everyone's like, well, you're relying on this set of signers to sign off on it, right? And it's like, well, okay, if you get rid of the signers, now you've got logic. How confident are you that you wrote the right logic into the contract and that it's not hackable, right?
What is the history of launching these systems purely dependent on the logic of actually being secure?
It doesn't seem like it's super high,
no.
If I was being completely honest. You know, I think there's a real trade-off there. You know, it's like an author, like the key system's an auth system, right? So you got to go ask 12 people or however many if they agree. And they have to look at it and independently verify whatever hand wave. And there's some logic. There is logic written into those contracts right now, like that kind of thing. So it's not like we're currently not a logic based thing, whatever you want to call it. But I don't know. Is one better than the other? Depends who you ask.
Yeah. No, and going back to the timing thing too, like so many of these ideas, at least on paper, seem very exciting and preferable to have access to. However, like, is the market there yet? And
yeah,
are we going to have a conversation 2 decades from now, similar to like eCash coming back on Bitcoin after it was tried in the 80s and 90s, where we'll be in the 2040s and ZK rollups, whatever, we get implemented somewhere in Bitcoin. It's like, oh, this actually is great, but the timing's better now.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, timing matters, right? Like, yeah. We have less block space. Maybe all these things make more sense.
All right. Well, that was the big debate after mempools cleared. It's like, who's going to mine?
Yeah, like, who's going
to
mine?
Do we need to add tail emissions? It's like, it is an eternal September. It's hilarious. So, depending on it's completely inversely correlated to mempool congestion.
How much people want to talk about it, you mean?
Or what the problem is. Like, there's too much activity or not enough activity. There's spam on the network or nobody's using it. It's like,
Did you see how, like, who was it? Alex Leishman of River recently tweeted a post from the Ethereum ecosystem. So they recently, like a few years ago, updated their emission schedule. So that
make it ultrasound money, right?
Yeah, that's what they were calling it. Yeah. They're the captains of memes over there. I don't know. But like, what does that mean? I think it's like the way it works though is when there's a lot of congestion, you burn ETH.
Mm-hmm.
And when not a lot of people using your chain, you produce more ETH, right?
Yeah, and at the same time, they pushed everything to L2s, so...
Yeah.
There's no activity on chain, so now the supply is going back up.
The supply is going back up, right? Yeah. Which, in theory, which I'm, like, you sit there going, like, okay, so what was this supposed to be, like, incentivizing? Like, it creates... Now there's more... So the ETH supply is as big as it's been since, like, the merge, right? It's mm-hmm. back up. That's to right, where it like was.
At par where it was.
Yeah. Because so. People haven't been using the chain. They burned it all away, and now they've reprinted it all. But, okay, so you've printed a lot more ETH, so that means everyone who owns ETH is worth less now, right?
Mm-hmm.
So all the bag holders, I can't be making them too happy. I don't know.
A big dump last night.
Oh, I didn't see that.
Yeah.
Price went down.
It's down, like, I think, like 10% against Bitcoin, 20% USD.
Oh, wow. Okay. So it's...
It's hurting.
Okay. It's like, okay, but now, like, so does that mean, like, are people more incentivized to use it now that it's, like, worth less in theory? And so is that supposed to, like, increase the amount of chain usage because it's cheap now? Like, I don't know. It's, you know, it's one of those things that sounded maybe good in theory when they were at the whiteboard drawing it out. But now that it's actually happening, it's like, well, this almost seems like a negative feedback loop, which might actually lead to, like, a spiral.
An exodus.
Like a death spiral, right? Yeah,
it seems like it's happening.
Like, this is, but these are the sorts of things where people are like, okay, well, let's, like, add these EKP things and then everything's going to move over here. And it's like, well... Like, that sounds good on paper, but these things are hard to design with, like, long-term impacts in mind, you know?
Like, maybe just go back to Bitcoin with SegWit and Taproot. I didn't foresee the possibility of inscriptions and ordinals and...
I don't think anyone's thinking about that.
Yeah.
And that's you like, didn't, I don't think you technically needed Taproot to get the inscription stuff. It just...
It made it economically viable or something like that, right?
No, it was no. It was SegWit. Really?
Segment, yeah.
I mean, my whole, like, I'm like, you know what, look, guys, like, let's just get rid of the discount. Let's just, like, figure out how, the reason I was tweeting about this was, like, look, let's just make it so that inscription data costs full price instead of a discount. Right now, you pay a quarter price, right, for all mm-hmm. those bytes. Just get them pay full price for it. And I think Peter Todd was the one. This is why I like Peter Todd, because he, like, calls me out on my bullshit occasionally. That he was the one who was like, look, you can't do that, Lisa. Like, the reason why is because that would be a hard fork. And whatever, like, reason, whatever thing that they managed to shim in was a soft fork. And if you make them pay full price, that'll be a block. That will actually be a block size increase. And that'll be a hard fork. I don't know. I'm kind of like, all right, then let's hard fork it in. Like, let's just pay for it. Like, let's just make everyone pay full price. Every byte in a block costs the same. Like, no discounts. Like, I don't know. Make him pay for it. Like, at least it's like, does this fix the, like...
It makes sense. Like, why should you get a discount for some arbitrary use case?
Well, it means that people who spend stuff... Yeah, it means that... So OpCat is actually equally... OpCat is a very expensive way to do covenants. I don't think this gets enough... The thing about OpCat is people don't really... It took me a hard minute to figure out exactly what OpCat is going to do, how it works to do covenants. But one of the results is that it also requires a lot of data in the signature block, like same as an inscription. And so if you think that getting OpCat level covenants is going to help you scale the blockchain, well, there's a lot of data that goes into making those work.
And then what's the argument for OpCat? Is like you only need to make one of those signatures and then once the transaction's in the blockchain, you can sort of extend it from there? Or?
I don't know. This is where I get very confused about what people are proposing with it.
I don't want to lie, Lisa. I'm becoming more of an ossifier as the days go by. I'm just like, just don't touch it. It's fine. We'll figure it
I'm
out.
I'm like, let's just make it more expensive. Just make it like, maybe I'm also becoming like an old fuddy-duddy, like conservative Bitcoiner. And like, no, guys, let's just, you know, like you can have the fun stuff, but you got to pay for it. Like full price, like none of this, like.
Okay, do we need the fun stuff?
75% off. I don't know that we do, yo. Like,
I like boring old Bitcoin's good money. Like,
Bitcoin is good money. I mean, I like Lightning.
I love Lightning.
Lightning's great. Lightning is pretty boring, though. I think this is why it gets FUD. This is not very exciting. It's like
the most exciting thing that happened to Lightning like 2 years. Like, we got Tether on it now, and everybody's like, yeah, whatever.
I'm curious to see how this other thing works out. My question about it, and I asked a friend about it, I was like, how is it from a user perspective? How is this any different than having it on like Liquid or something? You can like swap that for, yeah. You can swap that with Lightning.
I've always, Matt has been making this argument for years, was when Tapas first came to be and people were talking about the potential for stable coins on Lightning via tapered assets a couple years ago, 3 years ago, maybe now at this point. And it's like the value, and I tend to agree with this, and I think Matt's onto something here. The value of stable coins and their current implementation is the centralized nature of them. Like they run on Tron because Tron's very centralized and very cheap.
Yeah.
And pushing that to the distributed Lightning network, which has all these liquidity restraints.
Edge cases.
It's like, why are you going to make it maybe not less efficient, but more of a headache in terms of coordinating sending a stable coin from point A to point B, where it works fine in its current implementation on Tron or whatever it may be.
This is a great question.
And the stablecoin issuer is centralized at the end of the day. So even if you put it on Lightning, like it doesn't prevent the centralized issuer from.
It doesn't. I mean, you still kind of need a centralized issuer.
Yeah.
And like, I mean.
I can hear Ryan being like, well, actually, in the back of my head right now. Ryan, if you're listening, we'll come talk about it.
Yeah, he definitely. I would love to hear what they have to say about it. I mean, I think this is where like. And this is kind of what you get, like, a lot of the people that are pushing the opcat stuff, I feel like, kind of come from a similar place. But, like, well, it's just not worth anything if it's not directly on Bitcoin, you know? Because I was at, they could launch the opcat stuff. It all exists on Liquid. Like, you could do all these sidechain, whatever you want. Go crazy with it on Liquid today because it's got all the covenant opcodes you could possibly desire already over there. And I was talking to one of the Starkware guys at Chaincode Research Day last year. And he's like, but there's no users there. It's basically, it wasn't like we could do it, but we want to be on Bitcoin.
Yeah.
For whatever reason. And I kind of feel like this USDT thing is similar. It's like, no, it's just not the same if it's not on Bitcoin.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, I mean, all right, now you got it on Bitcoin. Now what? Like,
yeah, well, it's funny, isn't it? Being positioned as full circle, Tether started on Bitcoin via OmniLayer.
Okay.
But that ran into constraints, like on-chain fees and stuff like that to mint the tokens, I believe. That's what happened. And it got pushed to
so it's a bit cheaper and more centralized, right? Because that's more centralized is cheaper.
Yeah.
I mean, I kind of see this as an experiment, and I'm interested to see where it ends up and what they build with it and what gets built on it. But, I mean, Lightning has a lot of sharp edges, I think. Is the fact that it's got Tether on it going to make it less sharp? I don't know. I don't think so.
No. I guess one argument that could be made is like it finds those edges faster as people, if the demand materializes to use it.
I mean, people have also been telling me that we have to have stable coins, otherwise Bitcoin's not going to scale and grow or something for a long time. So I'm like, all right, great. Now you got your stable coin. Like, now prove it, you know?
Yeah.
Like, prove that this is the thing you needed to make the use cases you are saying that we're missing out on happen. Like, I'm happy to have other people working on that and proving it out, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, stablecoin thing is always, it's always recognized that there is an obvious product market fit for particular users in particular situations. But ultimately, I think Bitcoin's goal is to replace the things that stablecoins are tethered to, which is the dollar. And yeah, it could be viewed as this bridge vehicle to get people familiar with the practices of receiving and sending cryptocurrencies that makes them more attuned to Bitcoin once the dollar.
I think it goes back to what you were saying earlier, though, about people just not being happy, content with the level of growth that we have. You know, that sounds awful, but it's like
$2 trillion market cap. It's like, it's pretty impressive.
Yeah, I do think it really does come down to like people just feeling impatient.
Yeah,
and I don't know, man. I'm just like, I guess I don't really care for that. You know, I'm like,
no, it's,
well,
it's a many Bitcoin. I cannot paint a broad stroke and just define anybody who uses Bitcoin as a Bitcoiner, but there's many. Like, once you see it, and this is whether you're working on the tech or you're in it solely because you think the dollar's failing and we need an alternative. And I think the latter is this phenomena is felt more acutely, where it's like you see it, you can't unsee it. You can't unsee the U.S. debt situation, the sovereign debt crisis, the inability to pay that back, and then recognize Bitcoin as an alternative. And at some point, once you see it, and you're at the point you can't unsee it, you're down the rabbit hole, you've transitioned a bunch of your net worth in the Bitcoin you're using as your savings vehicle, you just expect that everybody else is coming to the same conclusion at a similar pace. And that's just simply not the case. So there's this inherent blind spot where it's like, oh, I saw it. And like, so everybody else has to see it. And it's just,
so not the case.
No,
it's insane how not the case it is.
Yeah.
It's just, yeah, man.
This has to be obvious to everybody. And I feel like on the technical side, where all these, whether it's covenants, ZK rollups, just zero knowledge proofs generally, or anything else that we've been discussing, it's a similar sort of phenomena where it's like you have a dev who has identified a way in which to leverage Bitcoin to do something cool, and they just assume like, oh, everybody has to get this and think it's cool too. And it's like, yeah, maybe that's not the case.
It's not always the case, man. I mean, I guess my whole thing is, why help the government stay relevant?
Why help the government? Yeah. Particularly with stablecoins.
Yeah. Like, why are you doing the work to make sure that their asset gets in the hands of more people?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, you can, like, people can do that, and like, they're doing it. It's usually because they think it's going to help themselves or their own incentives, you know, to some extent.
I mean, I've seen it too, where, and Jack Mahler's of Strike came out when they enabled Tether in their global wallet, and it was driven by like their users being like, we need stablecoins. So I do see that like gray middle area where there is like the, again, going back to the former phenomena of people seeing Bitcoin and be like, everybody has to get it. Like, there's a subsect of users who haven't come to that conclusion yet, or maybe don't have the luxury to come to that conclusion because they don't have enough savings. They're like, I just need to get out of the shitty currency and the dollar works, and this is the easiest way to access it.
So it's like currency arbitrage.
Yeah. I can see it. But agree, I would agree. Like, I tend to focus my efforts on making sure the Bitcoin's successful so that we can.
Yeah. I think like singularity of focus is a really difficult thing to have in these modern times, right?
Oh, yeah.
It's like, I think it's totally okay to be interested and focused on Bitcoin and Bitcoin adoption, right?
Yes.
And, you know, I think it's also okay for other people to have other focuses. So, you know, like launching USDT on Lightning, is something that I know the Lightning Labs team has been working on for a very long time, right? So it's exciting. You know, I'm excited for them that they managed to get what they hope to get, you know, if they've been building towards that and they have accomplished that. So, you know, congrats to them for that. I think they deserve it. But I, you know, I think to me, it still feels outside of what I'm focused on, you know?
Yeah. What would you say is the core of what you're focused on?
This is a great question. These days, it seems to be throwing events for all the coolest Bitcoin developers all over the world. Which, you know, like, I started Bitcoin Plus in 2022 here in Austin. Mm-hmm. And I wish it was not as much of my focus as it is. I would say that because I have lots of other stuff I would like to be spending time on, mostly like building out more Bitcoin education, Bitcoin protocol education for Base 58. But some reason I keep doubling down on events.
Why is that?
Demand? I think they're just, you know, I think it's my personality. I am a little bit, I really struggle to get stuff done, and having deadlines and having social pressure seems to be the thing that do it. And events are the most deadline driven event person, like person oriented thing you can produce to some extent. And so those are easy to like ship for me. And it's hard for me to tell and say, you know, the reason that I have Bitcoin Plus started because I wanted to bring together all the smart people working on Bitcoin and showcase how cool working on Bitcoin is, and all the cool, really smart engineers that are building really cool engineering solutions in Bitcoin, right? Like, so Bitcoin focused. And I figured out really quickly that there's engineers all over the world, not just in Austin, surprisingly. I don't know why they're not all in Austin yet, but
not yet.
Yeah, but we're going to work on that one. But so I started, you know, and I wanted to see my friends that work in Bitcoin on cool projects, and I wanted them to come to a Bitcoin Plus Plus and present their stuff and hang out and make connections and be be accessible. I feel like Bitcoin Plus Plus is about making these ideas and these people in particular accessible, right? Mm-hmm. So I don't know, I needed to have it all over the world. And now I have it, definitely have it all over the world.
Well, it certainly has been cool to watch grow. And I think you're on the right track there. Because for me personally, like my journey, like just being able to have this conversation that we're having now, like I know enough to be dangerous to talk about covenants and mempools and the P2P layer versus consensus. And that's because I went to BitDevs in New York starting in 2015 and was able to have access to people like Peter Wolle and Peter Todd and many other like merch, like Jay who runs the BitDevs, like just being able to be there as somebody who was a silent observer for 2 to 3 years at that point, maybe not talking for the first few, but eventually building up the courage to approach the people that I've been following on Twitter and who I thought were doing really cool stuff and ask some questions. And for me, that gave me the confidence to then go out and write and have conversations about Bitcoin.
Exactly. Yeah. And the truth is not every Bitcoin dev can afford a plane ticket to get to New York or where all the fun bit of places are, right? So by bringing the events to all the different corners, it's like hopefully there'll be one close enough that you can afford whatever that plane ticket is, you know? You don't have to get a visa to the U.S. to come hang out with, I don't know, these like whatever brilliant Bitcoin devs are, is the thought.
Yeah. I don't know. No, and I think... it's been a massive success. Anytime you throw an event, people talk about it for...
Oh, that's great to hear, yeah.
Quite some time.
They're like, throwing events is, I would not wish it on my worst of enemies. They're stressful.
Yeah, I mean, we do a very low-lift live events. It's just a live podcast, and even those, which we probably do like 2 or 3 times a year. It's like, I can't imagine throwing a conference or anything like that.
Yeah, I mean, my conferences aren't even that big. I don't know. Yeah. I think the worst part is when it ends and you're just like, wait, that's it. You know, like hopefully everyone had a good time. I don't know. I don't do exit surveys. I'm one of those weirdos who like doesn't believe in surveys.
I don't like surveys either.
I just don't.
Yeah. And there's always, I think the thing that plays in your benefit too, as you may be able to tell if you're watching or listening, is still there's never nothing to talk about in Bitcoin. So you can literally design a specific Bitcoin Plus Plus event around some obscure topic to the broader public, but something that a subsect of Bitcoiners are definitely maniacally focused on.
Yeah. And that's one of the fun things though about it. It's like, I'm really excited about the Istanbul event because I'm excited about all the events this year, but Istanbul, I need to get the website updated too. So these aren't on the website yet. Maybe they will be by the time this goes live, hopefully. It's really amazing to, get to pick topics that I don't know as much about. Like the Covenants one last year, I was like, I don't know what people are talking about. I don't know how OpCat works. Like, let's just get everybody together and then they can explain to me.
It's selfish, actually, in a way.
Yeah, I mean, it's really, yeah. I mean, but most projects are, right? Yeah. Like, at the end of the day, like most projects are really kind of selfish. And all these people are like trying to scale Bitcoin for the greater good. I'm like, yeah, but you're the one standing in the middle of that, you know, like who stands to do well for yourself if everyone uses your protocol, you know, to some extent. Yeah. I feel like Lightning is, in some senses, is one of the few protocols that isn't centralized enough to like earn the people working on it like tons of money. It sounds weird.
That's a good sign. That should be a KPI if you're truly building an open protocol.
Yeah. Like,
how hard is it to make money?
Blockchain's gonna get mad at me. No, I'm kidding. No, they know how hard it is to monetize light and decentralized.
Again, it's a timing thing, I think.
Yeah.
I think we've had this discussion on the show. We were talking about channel ads first time you came on here.
Oh yeah, liquidity ads.
Yeah.
Those are real close to being launched.
Yeah.
I just need to do a little bit of work to make it. Yeah, again,
timing. That was what, 2 years ago? The studio was still white and we had the conversation in that corner over there.
Yeah, a long time ago.
And that was the first time I was in this room. That was the first time Logan was in this room. It's it's like a time, like I think people severely discount the lack, not the lack of adoption. There's been an incredible amount of adoption, but the amount of adoption we have between now and like 15 years.
From it's gonna be crazy.
Orders of magnitude higher than the first 16 years.
He's so insane. I mean, look, like Lightning is so effing successful right now compared to like when I started in 2018. It's insane.
It just works.
Like
for
it's
me.
So insane. It works and people use it. Like all over the globe, people are using this like protocol that I worked out, you know, like it's like insane to me. And like, I don't know. That's like, you can't take, I think the thing about Lightning is like people kind of take it for granted in some way, not granted, but like there was nothing inevitable about Lightning, you know?
No.
Like a lot of people worked on it.
We were being reckless for a period of time.
We were being real reckless for a real period. Yeah. And yeah, but now it's a thing and it exists.
Yeah. It's
cool.
Yeah, and you go back and we're taking a walk down memory lane. I remember like Casa launched their node and like it was thought like that's how we're going to get Lightning to spread. And it was a good attempt. I bought one, tested it out, loaded up some sats, but ultimately proved that like, all right, maybe this is the best form factor for this. And you iterate and you get to the point where we are now. That was probably 6 years ago where it's like, all right, we figured out how to do it. You have companies like Voltage, Amboss, others, and then Start 9, which makes it easy to run at home if you want to. And the market has sort of figured out, all right, how are we going to make this work?
Yeah. But it takes a lot of iteration. Yeah. Free markets too, you know, competition.
Yeah. The green light. Yeah. Like green light to that.
Green light project that Breeze is building on top of. Yeah. The Breeze stuff. Yeah. It's all really cool.
Are you still excited? I don't know. I've got your brain to pick. VLS, VLS, will that ever?
I'm still excited about that. Yeah. I've been a little disappointed at, like, I think this is a general complaint with Blockstream projects in general, though. Jade being, like, one of the big exceptions is, like, how long it seems to take them to, like, get things into consumer hands. And I'm kind of disappointed. I don't know, you know, it's, like, it's always interesting how much, like, I think adoption sort of follows leadership. That sounds weird. But, like, I don't really feel like there was, like, the right leadership personality that picked up VLS and, like, was, like, here's the little box you can buy and plug in at home. And that's your Lightning node keys. You know what I mean? And like have it attached to Greenlight in the background and like.
Yeah. Well, like think about, so for anybody at home, VLS validating Lightning signer.
Yeah, that's it.
Basically separates the keys from the node. So you can run the node in the cloud and sign remotely from a hardware device.
And you could just have like, it's such a cool vision that you could have this little like box that you plug in. And that's like your Lightning keys, you know, and you have backup, whatever, but you know, I think it has nice, like a backup stuff or like you could do it on your phone, but I don't know. I like the idea of having like a little box, but no one's made a box, you know, like I don't know that I could like go buy a box the same way I can go buy a Blockstream Jade.
Yeah.
And it's like, why doesn't that like what piece of was missing in the puzzle where that hasn't been created yet.
Yeah. And think about what that would unlock from like a decentralization. Like we're talking, Lightning is already the most decentralized L2 out there. Like if you,
I think it'd be huge.
Had something like this, it would just increase.
Because like, you know, it's like I did this Base 58, used to call it the LARP. We just renamed it to the workshop, but like this game, right? Mm-hmm. It's all about being able to touch the Bitcoin stuff. It's like you can make Bitcoin work, but you touch all the paper and like the miners are little boxes you punch numbers into. Like it's all very like, touchable.
Tangible, yeah.
Yeah. I think that having a little box that's like, this is your Lightning keys. Plug it in, it'll do the right thing. I think that would really change the game for some people, you know, because people like, I think people like touching stuff.
Yeah, like, imagine like you had, maybe it's a Voltage, Graham, if you're listening. Or
maybe this
is like a product you guys launched. It's like, we'll run everything in the cloud. Here's some hardware device we're going to send you and you actually control the keys, but we'll manage the node for you.
I think people would really like that.
Yeah.
I think people like knowing where their box is, you know? Like,
I certainly do.
Yeah, I do too. I mean, I think this is why hardware wallets are like amazing for this. Cause it's like, you're like, here, it's here. Like, this is it.
That's what produces the best aha moments, is when you walk somebody who's new to Bitcoin, you're setting up the first hardware wallet, you get them to write down their seed. If you're hand holding them, you get them to send a little bit of Bitcoin to a public address associated with the hardware wallet. Then you're like, all right, wipe the device.
Yeah.
You're like, what? You're like, wipe the device, trust me. And then you recover from seed and the Bitcoin's still there. I'm like, holy crap, this is how it works.
Yeah, it's cool, huh?
Yeah.
It's really cool. But you gotta be able to touch it, you know? I don't know.
Yeah. That's why I like mining. I can talk about another, like, mining's its own rabbit hole. That's what initially drew me to mining, was that touch, see, feel
of
the connection with the electricity, the ASICs, and sending the hashes to the pool. That physical sort of, that transmutation of physical energy into hashes into Bitcoin, always, it was so visible. It was like, this is something that gives me more confidence in Bitcoin.
I mean, but that's what made Bitcoin so revolutionary, is that it does touch grass, so to speak, right? Yeah. It's like the first protocol that touches grass. Like, it's the first grass touching protocol, you know? Like,
this is a meme, it means Bitcoin touches grass. This is the first digital protocol to actually touch grass.
Yeah, like through burning energy. But you have to burn energy in order to get
it's
Bitcoin.
Touching burnt grass, but it's grass nonetheless.
There's grass somewhere in the loop. I don't know. Yeah. The cows edit that produce the methane. No, I don't know.
I think we're onto something here. Again, Bitcoin touches grass.
Yeah, but I think that's literally what made it a successful, but not only successful, but also I think just, I don't know. It gives it that real world connection. I don't know. Yeah. So if you're building Bitcoin stuff, more real world connections, I think, like real objects, people like real things.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's like one of the first killer use cases of Lightning was paying for beer at conferences, right?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Yeah. I don't think my conferences has really been on the forefront of that, but it's been really cool to see. I think there's maybe the documentary they did with the BTC pay servers, I feel like, really kind of helps show how these conferences where you can pay with Lightning are
I mean, that's the forefront. Sweetest thing about Riga, about Baltic Honey Badger, is they've been at the forefront of implementing those BTC pay server point of sales, and it's cool. Like, you can literally pay for everything at the conference with Bitcoin.
Yeah. But I think that's kind of what that is kind of what the conference experience for Bitcoiners should be aimed for. I say this knowing that we're not going to have any of that. And if people want to bring it in and make it happen, that's great. But
Kooks, make it happen.
Yeah. Come to Brazil. You get 2 weeks now. Cool.
Yeah. Where should we send anybody who wants to participate in a hackathon in the next Bitcoin +++?
Yeah, go to btcplusplus.dev. Check out our events. I've got the two of the ones for the year. We're hoping six. I'm going to update the website hopefully soon with the rest of the events. So you'll be able to see them, get some tickets, come hang out. We're still looking for sponsors for events, especially for people that want to help sponsor the hackathon and give sats to builders to make cool stuff. So, hit us up on, we're also on Twitter, I guess it's called X now, and Noster, and YouTube. Hope to see a bunch of people in Brazil, or if not there, definitely come to Austin and check out the more mining focus event. I think it's going to be our biggest one yet. It's going to be good.
Yeah. Well, Lisa, you're crushing it. Thank you for doing all that you do. I know many, many people in your position often think it's thankless work, but I think I want to give you your props, because it's been awesome to see. And I think it's going to be very important, particularly as Bitcoin becomes cooler throughout time, that you're throwing these events and educating people about what they could be focusing on in Bitcoin from a developer's perspective.
Yeah, me too. Well, thanks for having me on to talk about it, too.
All right. We'll do it again. Maybe even during the hackathon, we'll do something.
Hell yeah, let's go. Yeah. That'd be great.
Yeah. I'm going to win the hackathon. You guys heard it first here.
Marty Bent is winning the Bitcoin +++ hackathon during South by Southwest. So.
It would be so funny if I actually do. I got to think of some ideas.
Come compete him. You can't let him win. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah. Come on. I like a healthy competition. Come on, Kamal. Austin, Texas, week of March 12th. March 10th to the 14th.
Yeah, it's going to be that week.
Get here. Peace and love, freaks.